So, this week we learned of many parashas. The Yetzias Mitzrayim really starts mitzvah of Karban Pesach. A lot of the formative mitzvahs of Klal Yisrael. One of which is Hachodesh Elohim, which is the first mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael because it defines our yearly rituals, but that's not what we're talking about tonight. Karban Pesach, everybody getting together as families and eating it to show their emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also found, and it's a primary mitzvah. You see that Karban Pesach had more significance in many ways, at least not to say it's more Kodesh, it's Kachim Kalim as opposed to, let's say, Chatas or Nasham, but it had this other perspective of really being an Iker of emuna. And throughout the ages, there was always a big push to do that as a display of staying true to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Towards the end of the parasha, we find the mitzvah of tefillin. And there are four parashas in tefillin, two of which are found in Sefer Shemos, in this week's parasha, essentially. And the other two are found in Sefer Devarim. We've talked about in the past, what did they have in their tefillin for the duration in the Midbar, because they only had two parashas now and they got the two later. And we came out saying essentially that the Rishonim seemed to learn that all four were given, just only two were incorporated into the Torah as a din in Torah, so to speak, as opposed to a din in Tefillin later on when Moshe gave it over in Sefer Devarim. However, we did find at least one Achron who contended that no, they had two and then they got two again later. Either way, Tefillin is an integral part of Klal Yisrael. It's used, even though many Rishonim say it's just an example, but still, lo davireku, that when we discuss somebody who doesn't want to do mitzvahs to the point that he's doing it lahachis to a degree, he's doing it because he wants to veer away from the Torah and display that he's not part of Klal Yisrael, we call him a karkafta de lo manach tefillin. Head or a skull that never put on tefillin. The Gemara says such a person is nichlal in poshei Yisrael, the negligent people of Klal Yisrael. There's a special punishment reserved for such people. They're still part of Klal Yisrael, so we're not belittling that in any way. They have kedushas Yisrael, but they're actively rebelling. Now, practically, as I said, most Rishonim learn that it's somebody who bedavka doesn't do mitzvahs. It's not because he just has the taiva. It's not because his lifestyle, he's not convinced of mitzvahs, which is something common in contemporary times, but it's somebody who knows he should be doing mitzvahs as an act of rebellion. Perhaps he doesn't want to put on tefillin. So, it could really be any mitzvah. The way the many Rishonim learn that sugya is, the Gemara picked an example. Nevertheless, in a more esoteric way, many Achronim and others who like to find symbolism or mysticism do see that tefillin is really, even though halachically that's true, but tefillin, a lesson is being taught. Tefillin, the person needs a gufnaki. He needs to have an appropriate body. What that means is debated amongst the Rishonim, but certainly it's ideal for one to have proper thoughts while he's wearing tefillin and a proper clean guf. And it's because it's considered the pe'er of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's God's glory. And we are displaying Hashem's glory. We put these boxes on our head and on our arm. The head really between our eyes is supposed to show that our intellect is completely focused and determined and striving to reach higher levels in order to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu appropriately. Right? Both the box and the knot are b'neinech. The box is at the top of that, the peak, to show the glory, perhaps, and positioned between the two eyes to show that it's really the center of what we're thinking about. And the knot in the back, if one were to just project where it would be, through the head, it should be right where the ball of the head comes into the neck, and that really is essentially right between the eyes of the person. So it's the center of the head, it's really the center of the skull. And the arm is really pointed towards the heart, and it's an internal thing. You cover it up, or you can cover it up at least, with your shirt sleeve, and that is considered, your heart is dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the different parashiyos show the unity, the achdus, or the ichud of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echod, Yischar Ba'onesh, these things, the Yetzias Mitzrayim, these are the integral beliefs and what makes up Klal Yisrael. Maran Bracha says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has tefillin as well, whatever that means, metaphorically. But it's clear when the discussion of what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu have written in his tefillin, the parashas resemble, Mika Amcha Yisrael Goy Echad Ba'aretz, who's the one nation. We are reflecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's oneness and glory in our tefillin, if we look at the parashas, and that he's chosen us. And in his tefillin, it has the one nation, the unity of Klai, so that we can achieve, and that we are to reflect him. So, Pe'eri Olai, Uferi Lach, you know, that's what we're talking about. We're really talking about the mitzvah of tefillin, that it's a display of the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
And it seems also uniquely Jewish. I don't know if there are any other nations that have some sort of similar type of ritual?
I have no idea if there were any in ancient times. I can say that the Gemara in several places discusses if one finds tefillin or different things, and in certain points compares it to commands, to different amulets and charms. So I do think it was more prevalent in ancient times for people to wear all sorts of charms on their body, many of which would have scrolls. In addition to tefillin, until relatively recent, some people still do practice this. Kameas were part of certain elements in certain parts of Jewish culture in different countries. And therefore, tefillin, there may be other cultures that have similar items. However, we don't do it for that reason. We do it because the Kodesh Baruch commanded us to do this. And in order that the Torah be perpetually in our mouths, as the Torah tells us, that's part of the reason of it. And therefore, we don't do it for a good luck charm or an amulet. It's part of Torah's Hashem and his mitzvah. But either way, it seems to display some of the integral parts of the belief system of Klai Yisrael, and therefore Pasha's bow, which is really when Klai Yisrael is finally displayed as being developed and ready to go somewhat on its own, if you will, it's really part of Emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's a very important mitzvah. Starting off, and I do want to get into the more halachic aspect a little later of chatzitzus perhaps and too much hair, which is not a problem for me unfortunately anymore, maybe when I was younger. If that's a problem, if you have wet hair, if you just took a shower, putting on tefillin, things like that, if somebody puts mousse or gel or something in his hair, is that a problem to put tefillin on top of that? But before we get to that, just the one thing that we find, and perhaps it has to do with the nature of tefillin, you don't find too many mitzvahs where there's a prevalent custom to try to accomplish all the different variations of it. We know there's Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, if you will. Now, we call it Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. In reality, many Rishonim were split as to the order of the parashiyos. There are four parashiyos. They definitely go two and two, as we've mentioned, the two from Sefer Shmos and the two from Sefer Devarim. The question is, how are they ordered in the boxes, in the head? Do the two Vahayas meet in the middle, so it goes, from outside to inside, both ways, or do they just go straight across in the order as they're written in the Torah? And Halach L'maisa, we pass in with what's called Rashi tefillin. However, because it's significant enough of a mitzvah, of a machlokas, I should say, so even in the Shulchan Aruch, he advocates that Anshei Maisa would put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. I concede I do not have Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, nor have I put on Rabbeinu Tam tefillin in my life. Is it something that I think maybe once I might want to, just not to be, so to speak, karkafta de la manach tefillin? I think it might be a good idea, but la halacha, I don't think it's necessary. Since Klal Yisrael has accepted and paskin, we do have authority to paskin, that la halacha, Rashi, tefillin are the ones taking la halacha. So that is what stands. However, it's enough of a machlokas that we want to be choshish for the other shita. We don't find that too frequently. And I think the reason behind it is because we're really dealing with such an integral mitzvah, so if it can be accomplished both ways, we would like to accomplish it both ways. And the way it seems to be mentioned in very early poskim is that Anshei Maisa, the ones who would do this, actually would wear both at the same time, which certain Sfaradim really do Now they see it more frequently, I think, in Eretz Yisrael, just because culturally there's more of a diverse population there, from people from all sorts of different regions. But tefillin, you know, can be pretty small, two fingers by two fingers, really. So the Gemara in Erevin tells us there's, on the place of a person's head, it really can fit two pairs, so you can put one and then the other one right behind it. So they put on both Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, and both their arm and their head at the same time. That way, the bracha can be chal essentially on both of them, if you will. More commonly, and well, it's not, because one's not really a mitzvah. You know, you only want one of them to be the real mitzvah. The other one, you're just doing it for no reason.
So you have to make it. One has to say the tanai before.
I think it's implicit. I think everybody knows that it's implicit.
That we're saying one tefillin is not
theoretically it is.
Just, you know, for the fun of it.
Well, we know one's right and one's not. And whichever one's the correct one, that's the one I want to be my mitzvah. And the other one is sitting on my head.
I'm trying to get into this. When we say one's not correct, that means that that's not what Moshe wore at her. So when we're saying it's not correct, we're saying...
So, it depends how you want to deal with it. Some people maintain that there's different styles, mystically or what have you. But in a practical sense, in a more rational sense... people say, yeah, I mean, it's like many other machlokas, and that over time things get a little distorted. There's a whole discussion, how do you have such a machlokas, you know, if tefillin are worn on a daily basis, and so from hopefully we're writing fairly regularly, how could it be that there's a breach in the tradition? The answer from a practical sense is very simple. We know historically tefillin were somewhat expensive in many places, and we find Rishonim talking about how kimat nobody wears tefillin in certain entire regions. They couldn't either afford them, or it wasn't accessible, or unfortunately maybe they weren't inspired to in some places. It wasn't a prevalent mitzvah. So because it fell into disuse in many areas, that allows for there to be discrepancies in how to make them. And we do find that. One of the proofs that they bring is they try to bring from the Anshei Eretz Yisrael. The Eretz Tzvi is, you know, the Beis Yosef as he refers to it. And this tshuva that he's quoting, because he says over there it was never discontinued. They have a very old tradition that the people there have always been wearing tefillin. Masha Enkin in other countries where unfortunately they weren't always able to do so. So, you know, the practical way from the early poskim, it's indicated that there was some sort of lapse and breach and some part of the Masorah was unfortunately corrupted, and therefore it led to machlokas. In a different sense, you could say that there really were always supposed to be two different types of tefillin for two different tzuros. That's, I'm not sure how to get into that exactly. What I can say is that, you know, there are many other machlokesim with tefillin in terms of not just the order of the parashas, but do the parashas go vertically inside or horizontally inside. Rabbeinu Tam would not wear what we call Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. Because he has other shittas that we don't accommodate. It's only that specific machlokas that people are makbid for, because that is a very widespread machlokas. Just because there are other tefillin machlokas doesn't mean we're accommodating all of them. In fact, they say when they ask the girl why doesn't he wear a tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam, he said, if I would, I'd have to wear 36 different pairs if I really wanted to accommodate every different shita that was, you know, out there. Nevertheless, we do find the Mechaber and others do mention this idea of wearing both. What's more prevalent, at least in America and most other places, that people wear Rabbeinu Tam is they'll put on their Rashi tefillin, and then after davening they'll put on their Rabbeinu Tam tefillin.
Without a bracha,
correct. Interestingly, you know, you can't switch from one to the other. You can't take a ritzua from one and use it for the other. And that's where it's interesting. Because Malin Bekodesh Shlo Maridin. So, normally you would say, well, the Rabbeinu Tam one isn't really the mitzvah. So if you want to take a ritzua from Rabbeinu Tam and go to Rashi, what's the problem? From Rashi to Rabbeinu Tam, I understand, because La Halacha, we pass like Rashi, and we don't pass like Rabbeinu Tam, so I can't go from Rashi to Rabbeinu Tam. But L'chaor, I should be able to do the other one, but we pass in the Kessus and others break down, you can't switch either way, because maybe it's like the other way. Which is a fascinating thing, because it means that even though we pass on Halacha, we're concerned here. There's enough here to be worried that there's a push.
We don't focus Beisham Beisil. We don't do this.
We don't, because Beisham is Eino Mishnah. But that's exactly what I'm stressing. Over here, this machlokas was so prevalent to a fairly late time period, relatively, to the Rishonim's time, through the Rambam and the Rai, that still had this, the Gaonim we see were involved in this. It was a long-standing machlokas that went to fairly late. There were communities in the times of Rishonim that only held the Rabbeinu Tam. So, that being the case, this push to accommodate, you find it more here. So that's, you know, just you know, a point to put out there. The Beis Yosef does mention, which is interesting, that they were doing some, you know, some people were around the kever, I think it was Bichaskel, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe I'm wrong, it might not have been Bichaskel, but they were around the old kever from one of the people from Tanakh, and there was an earthquake, and all of a sudden something was exposed, and they noticed many pairs of tefillin. And the question is, can you be mechriya based on that archaeological evidence? And there's a back and forth, and it actually should be relevant nowadays. If we find this from tefillin, you find this somewhat precedent. If you find evidence of what was being done at a time that will assume they were doing things with a better tradition than nowadays, when we've unfortunately lost certain things over time, would we be able to adequately say, well, then that is the real tefillin? And if not for the fact that there were possibilities both ways, it sounds like we would if you knew with 100% certainty that those tefillin were used. But the counter argument was, maybe those tefillin were buried because the sofer wrote them incorrectly. Now, tefillin have to be written in order, and the parashios have to be written in order. So if the sofer wrote them in the reverse order, whichever manda amr you're holding, then they're going to be pasul. So because of that, that unfortunately was not able to be used as proof. We didn't know that they were buried because they were put in shamus, which, keep in mind, is questionable. Why would somebody put good tefillin in shamus? Why do you have several pairs of tefillin that are valid? You know, we don't just put things in shamus for no reason. So maybe it is because they're apostle. Now, there were seemingly no other notice of psulims, but maybe, who knows? Maybe the sofer didn't write them lishma, and the order was, you know, who knows? I don't know. But either way, that is something of note. So as we continue with...
Has since this been an issue where they found documents identifying Haraganese, and then they find documents telling them passing differently the way we do?
We find evidence throughout the ages that sheds new light on practices. Sometimes it indicates that in certain generations they did things that seem counter to what we're doing. That doesn't always mean that we have to pass them like that. In terms of, if we find stuff in the Cairo Geniza, it just indicates that there were either Rishonim or Gaonim who held a certain way. That doesn't mean that there weren't other Rishonim or Gaonim that held differently. Because if you go back to Tanakh, you have a much better, you know, a better basis here. Times of the Gaonim and the Rishonim, you're likely to find Machlokas. You do find certain things in the Cairo Geniza that would have come up if we picked the other topic for this year. You know, like in the calendar, that do call into question certain practices that maybe they entered at different points in time other than what was originally thought as tradition, and if it's valid or not. You have to reevaluate, and you genuinely do. But practically, it's not common to find these things making differences. So, continuing with tefillin, this very important mitzvah, there's a machlokas between the Rosh and the Rashba. Now, everybody agrees that your tefillin shel yad need to be placed directly on your bicep, or the bicep area. There can't be something being mafzik. You can't put it on your shirt, and which is on top of your bicep. And they darshan that from a pasuk that has to be al yadecha, has to be on your hand. But the Rosh and the Rashba disagree about whether or not the same is true for the tefillin bein einecha. Do the tefillin shel Rosh need to be directly on your head, hair/head, or can you put them on top of a hat? The Rashba is mekel, and the Rosh is machmir. The Rosh makes a hackish between tefillin shel Rosh and shel yad, and says that just like tefillin shel yad need to be on the hand, so do the tefillin shel Rosh need to be on your hand. And there are proofs we bring from the Kohen Gadol that there was a small area between the mitznefes and the tzitz that he was able to put tefillin on. And why would he need an area in between? Because it could not be on top of the mitznefes. So the Rashba, you know, there's this back and forth, so to speak, but the Rashba holds that there's no hackish. He thinks, supposedly the Rosh, you know, he would have said the Rosh, you know, kind of made that up, so to speak. And he holds that you are allowed to put it on something thin, you know, as long as it's not totally not considered on your head anymore. We don't like to hold like the Rashba unless necessary. But the Mechaber does say if you have somebody who's unable to expose his head, maybe he has a cut or some other ailment on his head that's going to prohibit him from putting tefillin on, so he should put on tefillin, but he should not make a bracha in such a situation. Now, keep in mind, for Sfaradim will make one bracha, so it's only going to be with the only make bracha and shoyad, and they pat to shorosh, so it's only going to be an issue if they're mafsik between shoyad and shorosh. But for Ashkenazim, it's a real issue. If you have somebody who, for whatever reason, can't, you know, put tefillin directly on his head, it's too sensitive, or whatever the situation is, he should still put on tefillin on as thin as possible, but reasonable. You know, if there's bandages or something else, he should put the tefillin on, because according to the Rashba, he is yote tefillin.
You refer to the bias, you refer to the tzus.
So there's a machlokas between the Mechaber and the Rima as to how much of your tefillin is necessary to be without a hafzik. And the Rima holds that it's as much as necessary for it to be affixed to your head or arm. When we're talking about in the arm, where both Rishonim held that it needs to be there. The Mechaber holds it's only under the bias itself. So that's the nafkamina there. Now, when addressing that, according to the Rima, once you've sufficiently affixed your tefillin on your arm, so, you know, one or two wraps will be enough, depending on, you know, your ritzuas and your arm, you know, everybody's different, it won't slide anymore. So once you get to that, according to the Rama, there's no reason that you cannot have something being chotzeitz in between. So according to that, your watch would be fine. You could just put it right over your watch. However, the machtzis ha-shekel, because we wrap seven wraps. Why don't we just put on our tefillin, if that's really where the end of mitzvah kshira on your yad stops, so we put on our yad, then we put on our rosh. When we finish with the rosh, we then finish up with the yad. Why do we do it like that? That's the common practice, is most people wrap seven wraps on their arm, and then they put their shel rosh on, and then they finish up on their hand. Why do they do it that way? I understand why you're mafzik, because the rest is perhaps just a minute on your hand. You really did the mitzvah, and you don't want to be mafzik between the mitzvah of the yad to the mitzvah of the rosh, with that which is just minuk. But according to the Rama, you've really finished your mitzvah after one or two wraps, whatever it is, enough to affix it to your arm, then go to your head, and then go back. And there are some achronim who maintain you should do that. You should know. That's not that prevalent in minhag. So we see more within the mindset of the machtzis ha-shekel, and the seven wraps, which really goes up to the wrist, so that, even though you're right, it's a minhag, but it's a minhag that is still considered part of the mitzvah of the shoyad itself. It's an extension, if you will, even though it's not necessary to do it. And therefore, we do the seven wraps, and then you'll need to do it on your hand, just like you needed, really, it's just the pulling tight against your bicep that's the affixing your tefillin to your yad kshira. Why do you need the one or two straps, according to the Rama? So that it wouldn't slide. So for my seven, in order to not slide, I need one or two. But that means that once the seven stop, it's not going to slide if I do it on my hand. So after that point, there's no reason why I can not have a chatzitza. So there really isn't any reason you're allowed to wear your watch after you have your seven are finished. Some people look at me, look at you. I can't help you there. But you can wear your watch after that point, and it's not a hafzik, or chatzitza, because there's no issues of chatzitza after that point, according to the Machatzis HaShekel. What's very interesting to note, and I've done this before, unfortunately, if you're running late to shul, and you want to answer Kaddish, or maybe a person saying Kaddish. But he wants to get his tefillin on quickly because he wants to be able to keep the pace with the shul. So sometimes he can get his tefillin on, basically, he'll put on the shoyad, but instead of doing all seven wraps, he'll just do one or two, whatever's enough to affix it to his arm, and then he can put a shel rosh on quickly, say, Baruch Shem Kol Machusol Le'olam Vahed. At that point he can talk, technically. The rest is just this minute. So he can answer Kaddish from that point in time. So if somebody's running late, Kaddish is going to be in a few seconds, whatever it is, and he knows he can't get his tefillin all the way on, but he wants to get them on, so he can put it on in that fashion, and then answer Kaddish, even though he didn't have a shel yad fully on, and, you know, continue from that point. So that's just something that one should be aware of. It's helpful a lot of times. Nevertheless, as we mentioned before, the shel rosh, you shouldn't have a chatzitza. Now it's interesting, what constitutes a chatzitza for tefillin? What's the issue to have there? So we know a hat would be a chatzitza. In fact, we find precedent in the Yerushalmi, the Beis Yosef quotes this, the Yerushalmi tells us that Rabbi Yochanan was very finicky, I suppose. He was very susceptible to cold. We know from elsewhere in Shas, he was an Istinus, so he could physically get sick if he was under certain conditions. He was very refined, if you will. And therefore cold, he didn't adapt well to cold. And for several months a year, he did not put on tefillin, because he didn't want to take off his head covering. I don't know if it was a turban or whatever it was. He not just didn't want to, it was actually, it would cause him a lot of tsar, and therefore he didn't have to. He wasn't forced to put on tefillin for several months of the year, it would seem, when it got to the cold season.
There's still a mitzvah to put on tefillin.
He's positive. If somebody doesn't have a goof
enough,
he's
because he has some
positive.
Tsar, therefore he put different tefillin?
Yeah.
Person that's sorry doesn't bench, person that's sorry doesn't...
So here he's not going to have the proper yeshiva das, he's not going to have the proper mindset for tefillin. If a person doesn't have a gufnaki, he's potter from tefillin. So Rabbi Yochanan did not put on tefillin for, according to the Shami, basically also...
If he's sorry, doesn't hear the shofar in Shosh Hashanah?
Shofar, you don't need to have this yeshiva das for it, perhaps. Over here you should have. Now I'm not saying maker that we hold you need as strong yeshiva das. Nowadays we're pretty maker, all you need is a gufnaki. That you can, control your bodily functions. At the same time, it's a ma'yusa, certainly, to have more. There are different opinions on what level of nikias the person needs. So we do see practically he didn't put it on. Even though it seems there's a ritva that mentions that there's a mitzvah every day to put on tefillin. It doesn't say in the Torah how frequently to put it on. Karkafta d'loman ha'tefillin, the literal lashon is once in your lifetime. But there's a daily mitzvah to put on tefillin. The longer you wear it, the more mitzvahs you get if you're holding on the level to wear it for longer. If you're not holding on the level, you should take it off sooner. Because why should I keep it on if I'm not supposed to have it on for too long? So a person has to have his own hashar of what he's holding. Nevertheless, so what is a chatzitza? So when it comes to mikvos, or netilas adam, which are really the same halachas, so we see rov and matbid is the midoraisa. So there's chatzitzas midoraisa and chatzitzas midorabana. For me, going to the mikveh, if let's say I was a kohen and I wanted to eat truma, I need to go to the mikveh. So if I have a chatzitza on me, that number one, I'm makbid, I don't want it on me. And number two, it covers most of my body. Midoraisa, that's a chatzitza. If it's only rov, or if it's only makbid, midoraisa, it's fine. I can go to the mikveh. And there's no problem. Midorabanan, we hold that either rov or makbid is considered a chatzitza, and the tzvila is invalidated midrabanan. But a mi'it, she'eno makbid, something that's a small part, it's not taking up most of my guf, and I'm also not makbid, that, such a thing, I even can, I can tell. So it comes up more frequently, and I've gotten this question many times. Somebody comes back from taking some, cup, tray, whatever it is, to the Kehli Mikvah. He says, there's this little sticker on the bottom. I got most of it off. I didn't think I got the whole thing off. There's a little bit left. Is it a problem? And it's definitely a mi'at, because you look at it, it's definitely a mi'at. And the answer I always say is, would your wife serve with this, with company? Is there a hakpad, or does she not care? And if, the reason I say wife is because most guys don't care about anything. But, if the guy would care, then he could, deal with it himself. Because then, is it a mi'at? It's definitely a mi'at. Is it makbid? Well, I don't know. You have to tell me. What are your hakpadas? So, it's the same thing with a person's guf going to the mikvah. Is that what the issue with tefillin is? So then it's pretty small. Right? Or I could have certain things in my head, and it's not going to be a problem. Now, there's reason to believe, though, that we don't go with the general rules of miyat she'ena makbid for tefillin. There's a gemara in Zvachim that tells us that by the big day kahuna, so any little bit is a chatzitza. It talks about a dead louse. It talks about the wind just going under the clothes. The clothing of the kohen have to be on his guf. Now, it's not 100% of a good comparison, Because there's tension. The Gemara says is trying to deal with, the Pasuk tells me he has to wear it, and it also tells me it has to be on his skin. So it's even talking about how to arrange in the armpit area of the clothing that there shouldn't be air there. And the Gemara has this friction. Is that considered derech levisha, or is that considered chatzitza? Meaning, I know there shouldn't be air there, but if you create clothing in a way that it's so skin tight, other than in contemporary society with spandex, that's not clothes. You know, that's not how people wear things. Back then, they certainly didn't wear it. So we have this tension that the Gemara is trying to figure out the exact point where it's still levisha, and because of levisha, it expands what we're going to allow for big day kahuna. But I clearly see that miyat she'eno makbid is not the factor by big day kahuna. So I see by mikvahs and netilas yadayim it is, and I see by big day kahuna we're more makbid. So most poskim assume that the idea by mikvahs is actually the yotzei min haklal. Chatzitzas are normally chatzitzas. That's just how it goes. Throughout Shatz, it happens to be that by mikvahs there's a halacha l'moshe misinai, and if you look in the sugya that talks about where it says that it's a halacha l'moshe misinai for chatzitzas, Rashi there and others specifically mention for mikvahs. Now, netilas yadayim, which is a derabbanan mitzvah, right, is modeled after its ke'ena tefillah. It's like a miniature tefillah that they modeled netilas yadayim after mikvah. So mikvahs to have this concept of it, but anything else, a chatzitza is a chatzitza. So a person should make sure that there's nothing on his head that is going to be a problem. That doesn't mean that other things aren't going to be non-issues. Meaning, there are other things that aren't normally chatzitzas that aren't chatzitzas for tefillin. It's just that specific mitzvah makbid versus any chatzitza. But what constitutes a chatzitza? How crazy do I have to get about this? So there actually is a Mishnah L'Melech that discusses, there's a Rambam that says when the Kohen Gadol gets out of the mikvah, he's going through the process of Yom Kippur. So in the order, it talks about every time he goes to the mikvah and what he does, and then he goes to this carbon, and he goes to this part of the Beis HaMikdash, etc. The Rambam is recording, you know, the same order of events that the Mishnayos and Gemara and Yuma is going through. So at one point, or in several points, the Rambam says, he goes to the mikvah, he comes out, umistapik, and he dries off. And the Mishnah Malach says, I'm not sure what the Rambam is doing here with saying, and he dries off. Is he saying it because that's practically what he does, even though there's no halachic ramification of drying off? Or is he saying it because if he wouldn't dry off, his clothing aren't touching him? Because there's water being mafsik between him and his clothing. Now, it's very interesting because there's a general klal, seemingly not the part of a halacha l'moshe misinai specific to mikvahs, but seemingly encapsulating all regular chatzitzas, that something that's wet, we don't consider the liquid as being a chatzitza because the garment, in this case, is really touching the skin through the water. We don't see there being a real chatzitza. It's a Mishnah that talks about this, that liquids are not generally mafsik. So if that's the case, what's the hefsik here? So the Birkei Yosef, the Chida, he has this whole mahalach to be mechalik between when something says al, that it has to be more than just no chatzitz, it has to be a super touching, and therefore for tefillin also, where it says al yodecha, on your hand, and perhaps there's a hekesh to your shel rosh, that water would in fact be a problem. However, even though the Birkei Yosef does say that, it does seem that it's not the mahalach by most poskim. Most poskim, Shlomo Zalman was making also. I saw in a sefer that just put out of his recently. You see, the Shari Tshuva does bring this idea from the Birkei Yosef, but then in the same sentence, he brings a Pnei Arya that we'll address in a few minutes. So he's just being more like encyclopedic. The Pnei Arya that we'll quote in a few minutes clearly doesn't hold of this concern. The Pashtus is when the Kohen Gadol comes out and he dries himself, there are other issues why the Kohen Gadol would have to, even if it's halachic. First of all, the Mishnah Malach was specific whether it's halachic or not. It might not be halachic. Even if it is, it could be for certain elements of being mekabel tumah, the Kohen Gadol coming out of the mikvah, he would start to sweat or whatever it is that were more makbid by kachim. Chomer B'Kodesh. And therefore, it's not such a good raya. The Mishnah that talks about liquids not being a chetzitza, it doesn't seem there's a precedent from Shas to show that there would be this chilik between al and not al, as the Chida is saying. And in fact, verachatz b'saro b'mayim, it says you have to wash his flesh in water when talking about a mikvah. So I know it doesn't say the word al, but who made up this din of al? B'saro b'mayim. The flesh has to actually be in the water. And we see for mikvahs, liquids, other than the mikvah liquid going through it, you know, if there's certain liquidy mud at the bottom or things like that, the Mishnah talks about. So that's not a problem. Or some ink that's going through, that's not a problem. The little ink on your skin, if it's wet, it's not going to be a problem in the mikvah. So that being the case, you know, it seems that drush is difficult to hear. We have other teirutzim for that Rambam. And therefore, the pashtus is that the liquid would not be a problem. So somebody took a shower, he would be able to put on tefillin. I would recommend even with a bracha, he could put on tefillin. However, I would recommend not putting on tefillin in such a case because it's not good for your tefillin. But what about things like mousse? Now, mousse, I'm talking about once it's dry and like it's that brittle, cracky, you know, hard hair. We're not talking about a liquid anymore. So now the issue is you have something in your hair, it's not the normal hair. But you want it there. So that gets into the Pnei Ari. The Pnei Ari was an interesting case. It's not the minig anymore. And when I say minig here, I'm not talking about an halachic case, but culturally, it seems the cool thing in Rotterdam back in his day was to put white powder in your hair to, like, you know, make you look, you know, like the George Washington style wig and that kind of thing. So people put powder, is how it's actually written in the tshuva, and subsequent, like I said, the Shari tshuva quotes him. But very briefly, the tshuva is actually fantastic tshuva at length. Two tshuvas, side by side. But they would put this powder in their hair. And the question is, can they put their tefillin on top of this? It's talc, I'm assuming, you know, something like that, that's making the hair give the appearance of having white hair. So can you put on your tefillin, or is it a chatzitza? Now, we have precedent if a woman has rings on her fingers, she has to take them off when she goes to the mikvah. Or a man wearing rings also going to the mikvah or washing his hands. Why? I want it there. It's not makbid and it's a miyat. Right? So the answer there is because you take off, or she takes off the ring, in the case of Gemara, when she's kneading dough. There are times when she bedafka doesn't want the ring on because she doesn't want the ring to get dirty. So the Pnei Ari is looking at this and he's saying, I have another klal. When I take a lulav, so there's a rule that I can tie my lulav up with anything I want. Right? That's how we hold. Because lulav ein tzarech eged. A lulav does not need to technically be tied up to the dalad minim, but it's a noi, it's a beautification to have it all tied up. So to beautify it, I can tie it with what I want. But my hand isn't touching my lulav now. And we know it's supposed to be touching it straight on the lulav and asrog. So Rava, and this is how we pass and says, in Sukkah, anything that's meant to beautify is not considered a chatzitza. Therefore, says the Pnei Ari, the powder, this person sees it as noi. That being the case, the only issue is, I know it's noi, that's like the ring. The only reason why the ring is a problem is because there are times when Shibidavka wants to take out the ring. Over here, it does wash out. It gets clumpy, he says, after I don't know how long they would wear it for before they would wash their hair. So they wash it out and then they reapply. But he says, they don't want that to happen. If they could have it stay there forever, they would have it stay there forever. So they don't, it's not like the ring that they bedafka want to take the ring off. They want to keep the powder there, and therefore he matured it. Even with a bracha, that one could keep and put his filling on. And it's a very good lump. So mousse presumably would be the exact same thing. Gel would be the same thing. Certainly if one dyed his hair, that's another question whether one can dye his hair for, you know, practically begadisha, but...
What about a toupee then?
So a toupee is a different story, because a toupee, it's called an aoso for his head, but it's the entire head. It's covering, and there's a major chatzitza now, that it's not really coming onto his head at all. Here, the powder is mixed with the hair somewhat, or the gel. It's still kind of touching the head, and it's, you're right, it's creating a miniature barrier, but the toupee, one really should not wear his tefillin on top of the toupee. But mousse or something like that would not be a problem. When it comes to dyed hair, so this is an issue the Rashba talks about, dyes and things for going to the mikveh. So first of all, it's for noi. Second of all, a dye most frequently doesn't even have mamashas to it anymore. So it certainly, it would not be a problem. As I said, one should ask a shayla before dyeing his hair with Begad Isha concerns. It's not so poshut nowadays it would be Begad Isha either, because there clearly are a lot of men who dye their hair. It's an interesting question, it's a different shear, whether or not it's considered normal enough for men to do, that it's out of the realm of, tikkunei nashim. But either way, for a tefillin part, it would not be a problem. What about too much hair? So is too much hair a problem? So there is machtes hashekel, says yes, it's a chatzitza. Now, based on what we've said, which we've seen as machlokas, it would seem that it's noi, I want it there. So, the Aruch HaShulchan and others, and certain
business. Why is it a chatzitza? I mean, it's your hair, it's normally growing that way.
Right. He holds that too much hair, it's supposed to go on your head, and he doesn't see the hair as part of your head. He holds the hair is something that, within normal amounts, is considered, I guess, normal, objectively noi, and therefore that's on your head. After it's a certain amount, so he also has some words about just Derech Moser. He thinks that, could be Daiva, what have you. But forgetting that, he says it's a problem for Chatzitza. So Derech HaShulchan and others have major questions on this, and they say, so how could a Nazir ever put on tefillin? Shimshon didn't put on tefillin? By the time he was 13, I mean, Shimshon, there are different types of Nazir. Your regular Nazir isn't a Nazir forever. A Nazir Olam is allowed to do a haircut once a year. And he brings all sorts of karbanos when he does it. But then you have an occasional Nazir Shimshon. So you're telling me that he never put on tefillin his whole life? Could be. Shmuel Hanavi was a Nazir Olam, right? So once a year he would bring... So you're telling me that he would only put it on shortly after he had a haircut, and then a few months later already he's not putting on? So it's difficult to assert that. And also this klal that the Pnei Ari is bringing of Kol Aviyos, so the guy wants it, he wants it to beautify it. The only issue with too much hair is a practical issue, and that is really, can you affix your tefillin? Well, I know with myself, as the years go by, it's less of a problem, but when it's been a long time since my last haircut, my tefillin don't feel like they're sitting as tight as right when I get a haircut. It feels nice and crisp when you put it on, it feels gishmak. So that's a practical issue, if it's going to sit on the right spot. But assuming not, there are those who are machmir. I'm not going to say not. As we said, there are those who are even machmir about liquids and things of that nature. But, it really isn't a concern. The one thing that I will say is a concern, but isn't practically an issue in most cases, is one who gets a haircut and didn't wash his hair to wash the clippings out of the hair before putting on tefillin. I say it's not an issue because you're not allowed to get a haircut before davening in the morning, because you're not supposed, unless maybe it's on a Friday and you're not going to have a chance later, so it's the Kabbalah Shabbos, but you're not supposed to do things for yourself and melacha and certain things until you daven. So you're supposed to daven first. It's possible, if you got a haircut the day before, I think most people, especially when they get a haircut, would have washed their hair the night before, I hope. But if not, so you're talking about a case, whatever it is, the guy didn't wash his hair. So that really could be a chatzitza, because keep in mind, what we're dealing with here is any little bit. Is a chatzitza. It's, even though it's a miyut, and he's not makbid, he's walking around in the shuk, it doesn't bother him, but miyut, shein makbid, doesn't make a difference for tefillin. That's a mikvah stigma. So that's something that just somebody should be cognizant of, if he's ever in that situation. And, other than that, it's going to be difficult to find a normal situation where there would be a chatzitza problem that's not obvious.
Certain haircuts, like steps, where people get like
Once again, call any else in the context. You know, as long as you're going to fix your tulum properly, you know, just make sure you adjust your knot if you need to. If it's a new hairstyle, you know, make sure you adjust your knot so that it can be tightly fixed on the head.
The guy's got a mullet, but I mean, that's the very long hair.
As long as he can fix it properly. As, if he's in a hechatimsa where there's no way to fix it, it's a problem. Because the tulum just physically aren't sitting on the right spot. But, you know, you practically either change the knot, or if it's impossible, then I would recommend a different haircut. But you know, as we said, you know, it's a very important mitzvah. It's the epitome of Kirkaf to Dul Manach Tulin, even if it's not literal. The fact that the Gemara picked that, you know, it's something that one should, you know, strive to do Bishle Musa, even if there are b'diavads of not having necessarily always, as we mentioned, Derech Agav Gufnaki is important. A person, even the right mindset, should have. He should think about his film when he's wearing them. You know, touch them occasionally just to remind him that he has it. We do this with tefillin specifically. It's one of the mitzvahs in Parshas Bo. And the mitzvahs in Parshas Bo we see are some of the definitions of the Ummah of Klal Yisrael. So.